I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. My name's David Reed, and this is Marek Larwood.
Hello, film listeners. And that panting in the background is not my excitement. It's Buddy, the dog, who I looked at him and immediately came over I never had that power before.
You have a special bond.
Yeah, but normally if I'd sort of give someone a look, they'll just ignore me or think I'm mental.
Yeah.
Buddy's responded as if I was a very attractive, you know, a sex object and just come straight over.
I think for a spaniel, you're pretty good looking.
Thanks. Hey, listeners. I went to the cinema. He's licking my feet. That's why I'm a bit distracted.
Come here.
Welcome to Film Fandango. It's a film podcast. We talk about films that we see in the cinema and generally about that. It's not a review show, all that business. This is for new listeners. I don't actually think there are any new listeners, are there?
What, you think we've just got the same however many people and
we
that's it?
We gradually lose listeners because we've got no advertising.
Well, death will get rid of some, gradually. If we're not adding any new ones, occasionally some will die, yeah?
How is anyone ever going to find out about this?
Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe we should work out how to get new people. What would we do? We'll make a movie.
Anyway, hello, old listeners.
Hi, old listeners.
If anyone stumbled across this,
we will eventually know all of you by name.
Yeah,
if you write in often enough. Marek's gone to the cinema this week.
Yes, I went to see the summer blockbuster, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Now, this is a sequel to Rise of the Planet of the Apes, which is a confusing way round, I think.
Yeah, because you think would be normally Dawn goes first, then Rise.
And then the sun rises, doesn't it?
Yeah, and the next one would be Breakfast.
Yeah, Breakfast. Or it depends how many they're making. We get Breakfast and then Midday of the Planet of the Apes.
No, the next one should be Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
Piss.
Oh, yeah. Piss, then Breakfast.
Piss, and then maybe Wash Hands.
Wash Hands of the Planet of the Apes, yeah.
Then Breakfast.
Shower. Socks, trousers.
When you put your pants on.
Everyone's... Pants? Oh, no.
Always put your pants on first, guys.
That's right.
Anyway, it's Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. What's happened is that there's some apes.
Can I try and recap the first one from memory that I saw probably a year or so
Go
ago?
On.
Okay, so in the first one, because I've not seen Dawn, how is she? James Franco... Yeah. And his Alzheimer's-y dad, John Lithgow, are sort of scientists in a way. And he has an ape called Napoleon?
Yeah, I think it's
Caesar.
Caesar.
And basically, he's doing Alzheimer's research and ends up making a ape that's really clever. And the ape gets put in a cage and treated badly by Draco Malfoy from the Harry Potter films... And then eventually escapes and goes off into the wild because mankind is treating him abominably, like he was a beast. And that's the end, right?
Okay, yeah. So what happens is there's some sort of simian... start of this, no spoilers here. There's some sort of simian plague that's wiped out a lot of mankind and...
Oh, that's bubbling under the surface in the first one.
And the monkeys have all gone to... live in the trees, and they set their own sort of tribe, sort of almost like caveman-like, but and they buildings, and they can talk to each other. What's odd is the fact that the subtitles of when the monkeys are talking to each other are quite complicated. They're just doing grunting, basically, moving their hands about, and yet they're using sort of maybe quite complicated adjectives and verbs. And you think Do you know what? I don't mean they're... And the sentence structure of some of the subtitles doesn't really... doesn't say, like, I'm feeling really indifferent towards the world today. That sort of thing.
Yeah, you'd rather they were speaking French or something. That would make more sense.
Yeah, it was a bit...
Je petit adore le soleil.
Anyway, in this so there's this colony of survivors, of human survivors as well, and there's a colony of apes just in the woods nearby, and the humans want to get to... the problem is the humans are running out of fuel, so they can't communicate with any other colonies. They want to get some fuel. And Caesar, who's a monkey from the first one, mm-hmm. set up a colony right by the dam, which they want to restart again so they can get electricity back into their colony.
Okay.
In my opinion, this has got numerous problems with this film. One is all the human colonies just... I'm not saying I'm right-wing, but...
Are they hippies?
They're just overly liberal. You know, like, I imagine it's like a whole lot of Guardian readers who suddenly think monkeys are more important than other humans, you know, and there's a couple of bad humans who are just two-dimensional idiots, yeah. thugs.
Yeah.
Because they don't like the monkeys, and the monkeys are just doing...
But I think if all of mankind was wiped out apart from a few survivors, I think there'd be a lot of right-wing people.
Yeah, it would be
a lot of thugs. I think would be left over.
Yeah, not these. They wouldn't survive, these liberal Guardian readers. Good.
Or they would change their views because they're so frightened and they've seen so much.
It's just always really sincere people. You know, the people at parties who are really left wing, sort of middle class people who just bang on about liberal stuff but don't do anything about it because they're so comfortable anyway. I've got a bit of a proper chip on my shoulder. And they only they all look as if they're about to start crying. They're those sort of faces.
Halle Berry.
No, she's not in it.
No, she just, every line she's ever delivered ever is like she's about to start crying.
It's that they've all got that sincere face on them, which makes you want to hit them.
And who are they?
The main bloke is a guy called Jason Clarke. I don't really know him. And his wife, Kerry Russell. And he's got this kid, his son, who's got one of the most punchable faces I've ever seen. My main point about this film is...
You wanted the mankind to die.
I didn't. The key thing about this is, I think this is a moment where, which is a potentially massive moment, and it's quite ironic considering that it's about monkeys getting more powerful than humans, becoming more human.
Yes,
it's in another sense parallel to that. The moment where computer generated graphics,
yes,
have produced better acting than the humans.
Ah, so
which is oddly rather in a sort of weird. I don't know what the word is.
It's
for
good
it.
Work from Andy Serkis, though, is it?
Andy Serkis, who's
and the
go-to,
whole digital team,
who's the go-to guy. Basically, he sticks a lot of polos on his face and moves it around, and they track the polos to move the. He obviously had a big role to play in it, mapping his face and copying his expressions.
Yes,
but I thought the facial expressions from the apes were incredible. Because there was a whole moment where there, what was that? The Tom Hanks ice Christmassy one.
Oh, Polar Express.
Polar Express was criticised because all the characters had their dead eyes, where they didn't get their pupils. So they all looked like there. But
early in that technology, it's horrible in that era.
Even it's a kids' film, they all look like psychopaths.
Yeah, the Christmas Carol, the Jim Carrey one that used that same technology, it's just horrible.
It might have helped the fact that they're... Yeah, you're right, Jim, that was weird as well.
Yeah.
That they're not human.
Yes.
So they don't have the same responses. But the emotions you could see going through where they didn't have to get the characters to say it all.
Yeah.
They would just show them... they could do the subtext of what they were saying. So it would be two monkeys talking to each other, and one would be... they didn't have to say that monkey doesn't trust you, and he's... Or the ape, so I should say ape. I'm sorry if I've offended any apes or corny monkeys. But they don't have to say, I don't trust you, you know, Caesar, or I disagree with you. They can show it in their faces.
And it was the actual acting.
And it was fascinating watching that, and it was better than...
Well, interestingly, in a lot of films, especially American blockbusters, they won't trust human actors with that subtext either. They'll put it in the script. Because, one, they don't trust the actors to deliver that performance, so you get the, oh, I don't trust you thing. They also don't trust the audience to be emotionally aware enough to read it in actors either. So they seem to just go, they just have the camera pan to one side and him say to somebody else, I don't trust that guy.
Well, I think the computer graphics were so incredible that it's, it may be sort of over it. sort of plasters over the little bit generic sort of and not especially original plot, you know, because it'll tell what's, you know, what's going to happen. It's all,
it's a middle plot. Movie of a trilogy, presumably.
Yeah, and the most interesting character is Caesar, and his sort of, it's a bit, and it does feel,
I
like,
like the idea the most interesting character is the CGI one, though. That's, but, good,
but it's him and the other, and I can't remember who the other, the Ash, who's, is Ash? No, it's not Ash, the second in command monkey ape. Second in command, ape, I'm sorry. Who is almost like Brutus. It's almost like a retelling of that, in a sense. But my problem was, and there's a little bit of spoilers here, that the good monkeys are the most human-looking ones.
Right.
And the bad monkeys are the ones that look ugly. And then you thought, you don't need to... you've taken the same thing.
Yeah.
The same problem with film, where the good guys are attractive and good looking,
yeah,
and the bad guys ugly, which permeates itself through the whole of society in a way we behave. I mean, it's a real problem that good is associated, that this myth of what someone who's good is good looking, that's what, how then suddenly people aspire to be that person and becomes a huge thing. That's a whole social problem I'm getting to. But the fact that they're doing it with these, they're supposed to be, they're not human. So why are you making, you're differentiating between them being human and monkeys. Why are you making them look human? So that annoyed me. But it's a fascinating film to watch. It's an action film. It's got great computer graphic performances. There's some brilliant bits where you've got apes trying to act like they're stupid to fool humans.
That's a nice
it's a really
idea.
There's a couple of really brilliant bits, and I was astounded by the movement and the CGI. And I'm not a big fan of CGI because I find it just an excuse of. I much prefer the old Ray Harryhausen sort of stop motion.
Well,
stuff.
It sounds like what they've done from this, and correct me if I'm wrong, is even though it's a CGI character, the character is the star rather than the technology.
Yeah.
Because what my problem with King Kong, another Andy Serkis ape performance, my problem with it as a movie is the King Kong stuff was great. Like, his characterization, and you could read everything. And obviously King Kong can't speak either, so it's all in the body language and facial expressions and stuff. But Peter Jackson so wanted to exhibit all of the CGI he could do, it was a boring, boring story.
Mm.
The story of King Kong is a simple fable. It's not a 3.5-hour epic. There's not enough happens.
Mm.
They steal a monkey and then take him away from his home and treat him poorly. The monkey falls in love with a woman and then dies for her. The end. That's it. That's the entire story. It doesn't need to be 3 hours long. So they need to get to this point where they're using the graphics to tell a story of a character they couldn't have done before, and that sounds like what they're doing with Caesar.
Yeah, I think it's interesting on lots of different. The plot's not especially interesting. But if you, as a film goer, it's fascinating to see this moment where technology, I think,
how has far become. We've come with it as well. I mean, I don't know if you saw Lost in Space with Gary Oldman and Matt LeBlanc, but that is an example of very early CGI monkey and space monkey that Eight. Time. No, this was a monkey. It had a tail. But my God, that has dated. If you see it on YouTube or look it up, I don't know why they even ran with it, to be honest. It just didn't work. They should have just had a glove puppet held by Heather Graham.
That would have been good. Here's my question for you, David.
Yes.
Has CGI gone really well in this and gone really well? An idiot. Will they ever use CGI to? Because they already touch up people's faces, actors' faces. Will they ever change the actors' expressions?
Ooh.
Using CGI to make their performances better?
How do we know they haven't already?
Maybe they have. So Oscar winners aren't necessarily.
Apparently, like in I can't remember. I think it was Atonement. They went through nearly every frame of Keira Knightley smoothing her skin over because she had bad skin on that production.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, they've gone through the entire film doing that. Some poor man has spent 6 months of his life airbrushing Keira Knightley frame by frame. I obviously it would be a lot tougher job to change musculature and stuff. I think they could already do it, probably.
But you can always, you can cheat in the edit. I know even when I've done really rubbish short films and I've not got the reaction, I've taken the reaction from something else and put it in. Yeah. And even the wrong bit, even me just talk or someone else just talking, relax on camera, and you take that look and suddenly it looks like they've done a good performance, but they haven't actually done that. You just lie in the edit.
Tells you what the facial expression
that's
means.
That's what I'm trying to say, yeah.
I think they could do it. I mean, there's always been a sort of fear that's been bubbling under the surface and people being sort of hyperbolically talking about it from decades now of computers replacing actors, you know. But I don't think that'll happen. They'll want it to, so they can control everything. It'll just become animation then, won't it? And the thing about animation is you can control every single aspect of it. Nothing is random. But that makes things very clean and precise and like Pixar films, you know?
But you could. I mean, I can see someone CGIing Keira Knightley anyway, her performances. Mm. But I can't see anyone CGIing Nicolas Cage's performance.
No, I mean, they wouldn't know what they were aiming for in the first place.
That's the trick.
Yeah.
Nicolas Cage has been a genius. He's realised that if he just does anything crazy, no one's going to find. No one's going to be able to CGI him.
No. He's playing the long game. The long game.
Well done, Nicolas Cage, you clever, clever man.
You've bested us once more.
I'll tell you what, though.
What?
I've got a few opinions. Say I'm one of the few remaining listeners.
I don't know why you think we have so few listeners.
We get about 1,600.
Yeah. And or it more. Creeps up over time. We get about that number who listen to it every single week. Yeah.
Well, if you're one of those 1,600, well done.
Thanks, mate.
Thank you. If they want to write in, how do they do it?
Well, you can email us, dearfilmfandango@gmail.com, using your own email address. Or you can go on Facebook/filmfandango and talk to us, and more importantly, each other there. Why not share film things? Find kindred spirits. Don't be alone. Or you can tweet
us. It's not a dating website.
Not yet, it isn't.
Okay.
There's where the money is. Or you can tweet us @FilmFandango, @MrDavidReed, or @MaritLarwood. And also, we always have to do this, and sorry, but we do all of this for free. And there are overheads, and we can't continue to do it without your support, basically. So, to everyone who's already donated to us, thank you very much. You're the reason we're still doing this every week. And to those of you who haven't, or if you didn't do much last time, or you think it's about time you paid again, then why not go to our website, filmfandango.co.uk, and follow the links from there to donate towards the running of the podcast.
It really helps. Even if it's just like 20p or something, it just helps us pay for the Libsyn thing and cinema
tickets.
And also, there's a Redbubble. If you put Film Fandango into Redbubble, you can get, if you prefer to get a t-shirt or
merch.
Something like that. Yeah.
And they now do cushions and bags. Have you seen that? They've added those.
Some of those. I'll tell you what, someone's written in, a regular listener. It's only bloody Chris Webb.
Chris Webb! What's he want?
Do you want to have a read?
Yeah, what accent's Chris Webb got?
Well, he's like English, but he's based in New Zealand.
Yeah.
But I think he's put some instructions on it.
Has he?
Where? He says try a New Zealand accent again if you want.
With our digital, that's how you get into it. I'm not very good at New Zealand.
It's good, mate.
Dear David, Merrick and Buddy, I read recently that the sci-fi movie Ender's Game was heavily boycotted in the US by various pressure groups due to the author's slightly extreme views on homosexuality and same-sex marriage. While the book's author had very little to do with the film's production, other than presumably getting paid a fat pile of cash for the option, it was enough for people not to see it in principle. So that's my question to you. Have/would you ever not see a film purely on principle? And by that I don't mean just because superhero films are shite, or that Adam Sandler is a total bellend. E.g., if Flight of Dragons was written by Gary Glitter...
That's my favourite film no one else likes.
Would you still watch it? I've refused to watch any of the Hobbit films, partly because of the backroom deals made between the New Zealand government and Warner Brothers, which set employment rights back 20 years, but also because of the very mean-spirited legal battle between the owners of the rights of all things Hobbit and the pub in Southampton, also called The Hobbit, over the use of the name. Merrick probably drank in there as a student.
I actually did, in my local, The Hobby in Southampton.
No, yeah. That's awesome. The pettiness of it all has saved me $20 per film and about 12 hours of my life. So what about you good people at Film Fandango? Dingo, ain't my baby. Has anything got you to limb so high on your horse that you've refused to see a film? Loads of love, Chris. P.S. I recently watched Blue Rain. It's as good as Marek says.
Blue Ruin.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's the porn version. Highly recommended. Thanks, yeah. Chris.
Oh, well done, Chris. Do I like
we,
Chris again
basically,
now.
To paraphrase his question, do we have any principles, is what he's asking.
My, I tend to get pissed off with everything.
Yeah, you do, yeah.
So either ignorance is the best
policy.
Circle of intelligence is best not to know anything.
I have seen a film because our guest Dan Tetzel brought it in that was produced by Joseph Goebbels. So I've definitely seen it, but I'm pretty sure he's not getting any money from DVD sales anymore. I think Goebbels isn't getting cash from Munchausen.
Yeah, you never know if he's in Brazil still somewhere, you know, dressed up.
I don't have a problem in principle with watching the art of evil people. The money thing is different, isn't it?
You could say that with, like, the I'm sure they're dodgy anyway. The Weinsteins run the film industry, and apparently they just, if you get on the wrong side of them, you're screwed, aren't you?
Yeah.
That's the end of your career. And I think
any of these power brokers can end careers and do, I think. I don't think that's an over-exaggeration.
If you met them all, actually, at the most ruthless, you think, I don't want to watch any of these films or blockbusters.
Richard E. Grant told me a story about Steven Spielberg that sadly I can't repeat here, but that ended with the phrase, "You do not fuck the Sun King," which was wonderful. This stuff happens.
That's why I'm shouting the merits of Blue Ruin.
Yeah.
Because I think, I don't know if they're sex offenders or not, but I think that's why you should try and go and see these independent films. That if we say something we like, I really like people go and see those films because they're the ones not being screwed over by the... Yeah. I read about the making of that, sort of the flip side of it.
Yes.
Where there's like profit shares and they put all their own money into it and it's a labour of love. That's why it's important you don't watch those. You shouldn't watch anything dodge anyway, but you give money to those films.
But it's also hugely problematic, isn't it, that it's never everyone in this production was evil and should be boycotted. Like, there's as a human shield in front of people with dubious business ethics are a bunch of filmmakers and artists and people trying desperately to get their passion project made. And the two you can't really separate from each other, you know.
Good answer. Shall I go on to the next letter?
Do it.
This is from Jane Brown. Dear buddy David and Marek, and Danielle, who I love but is no longer on the podcast, please excuse this rather extended email, but I've not sent communication before. I mentioned the podcast for Absolutely Age ago, I did the ages, so that's when we were on Absolute Radio a long time ago. Very close to the beginning, and really love it. I'm probably at higher age end of your audience, but hopefully not the oldest. I'm a huge fan of watching film at the cinema because the music always is. I'm not a huge fan of watching film at the cinema because the music is always too loud and the voice is mumbly. It must be my age. My earliest memories of the cinema will be 1959. Our parents take us to see Disney films at the cinema on Eltham High Street. I remember Sleeping Beauty, Pollyanna and Darby O'Gill and the Little People, who scared the bejesus out of me. It stayed with me for years, the stuff of childhood nightmares. And also the parents were fans of Carry On films, Carry On Nurse, Teacher and Constable. And then we moved abroad where the films were censored. West Side Story without a knife fight. that sounds good.
That's amazing.
And my mother was a fan of pop musicals, so we saw all the Cliff Richard and Elvis films in some very interesting cinemas there. Early on in the podcast, someone brought up Threads. This was a TV film I put to the back of my mind. I saw it about the time I had my first baby, and I can honestly say it really disturbed me. It's the reason I've not thrown away a pair of sunglasses since 1984. In fact, I've forgotten why I had so many pairs in various parts of the house until it was mentioned, and for some reason it keeps coming up. Probably because it is the most harrowing film I've ever seen, by some distance.
Yes. Welsh writer Gareth Gwynn brought it in. It is a wonderful TV movie. It still has on IMDb the most impressive CV of any actress or actor ever, which is one woman in Threads, And her only entry on her CV is woman who urinates herself, uncredited.
I think it's on YouTube, so if you want to really ruin your outlook on life forever, watch that thread.
Threads.
Carrying with that, sorry. As Marek is a Francophile, has he ever seen Hotel du Nord, a film from 1938? I haven't. I really love it. We came across the DVD a few years back. We're staying in an apartment in the Canal Saint-Martin near the Hotel du Nord. Also, a really charming Persian Iranian film, Children of Heaven, is worth watching if you haven't already seen it. Here's a question. Is there an actor you don't really like in other things, but there is one film that you love them in? Mine would be Jim Carrey. Love him in The Truman Story, Hugh Grant, thought he was in Fantastic in About a Boy, Keira Knightley, crap in a lot of things, brilliant in Atonement.
I'd agree with that. I can't really watch Keira Knightley in a lot of things or find she detracts from the film a bit. But in Atonement, I thought she was spot on. I thought she was excellent. Mostly because of her smooth, smooth skin. But Hugh Grant, I like in a lot of things. I don't agree with that one. It's a personal taste thing. Jennifer Lopez is the one for me. I've mentioned it before. She is perfect in Out of Sight, and the relationship between her and George Clooney is like proper on-screen chemistry, like an old classic film. It's wonderful. And then she's never picked a good film again, as far as I can see. Clearly there's talent there, it's just her personality sucks balls, and she picks the wrong film. She doesn't have good taste in films, I think, is the problem.
Jim Carrey, I think it's spot on. I think I really like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind,
yes,
as well.
And it's great. I think he's... I really liked Ace Ventura, the first one.
Yeah.
I think, you know, that is a film built around him.
I think he's done enough good... I think a better example for me, or not better example, in my opinion...
Yes.
...would be Adam Sandler, who I think is good... Is he in Punch Drunk Love?
Yeah.
I thought he was good in that, and annoying in Little Nicky, and it awful.
Yeah, yeah. I don't like his sort of farty, kidsy films.
He was Happy Gilmore was a great sort of debut for it, and then it sort of got worse.
Funny People, he's good because he tones it down. That's like his Eternal Sunshine, really. You know, he's playing a real bloke. Interesting. I'm trying to think if there's anyone else on that list. But I've never liked Randy Quaid. Does that count?
Not even in Kingpin.
I've not seen Kingpin. Maybe that would be the one where I could stand him.
I love that film. But Hugh Grant, I think he's done a lot of...
I think he has.
But The Boy is one of my favourite ones. I think it's a great film.
I can't fault Four Weddings.
Yeah,
I think it's a brilliant film.
I do like the other one.
Yeah, that's great, isn't it?
But what's the
one? The one. Cloud Atlas.
No, not Love Actually.
Notting Hill.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who was that email from?
That's from Jane Brown. And she also says, when I listen to the podcast, I look forward to Buddy's contributions and the sirens. As I live in a quiet part of the country, we don't often hear the blues and twos. And sometimes when I'm listening late at night on the earphones, I think that the police are raiding our cul-de-sac. I wish I lived in the country.
Yeah, we all do. Thanks, Jane Brown. Good email. In terms of not liking the cinema that much anymore, I remember, he's no longer with us, sadly, but my family took my grandfather to the cinema because he used to really like it when he was a young man, and he hadn't been in decades. And so we thought, well, we'll take him to see Jurassic Park. It was just come out, it was on at the cinema, and we thought the effects in this will blow his mind if he hasn't seen things since sort of black and white people on a train talking very fast and very clipped accents, and then we show him Jurassic Park. You know, what amazing. The only thing he had to say about it afterwards was, very loud. That was it. That was his entire opinion of the film. Didn't like it, just sat there going, oh, loud, for 2.5 hours.
How could you not like that? It was amazing. We've got another letter. Do you want to read it out?
Sure.
From Anne Coletta.
John Dean Coletta. What accent am I doing? I don't know. I'll do Anne Coletta as a pirate.
She's from Albany, so you can do that. It's just near New York. Not New York, but in the same borough sort of thing.
Oh, I can't do specific American boroughs.
Do a pirate.
Thanks. Hi, David and Marek. Woof, buddy. I've been thinking about Jerzy Skolimowski's Moonlighting. Don't know that. Starring Jeremy Irons. It's available here on Amazon Prime. I first saw it in 1984 and it made a huge impression on me. Cue digression about going to Roman Catholic Mass as a child and having people collecting for solidarity in addition to the regular weekly collections. Jeremy Irons leads a small group of Polish workers who illegally renovate a Polish government official's flat in London. He is the only one who speaks English and keeps the other workers from learning that martial law has been declared in Poland in response to solidarity. There are a lot of funny scenes, despite the serious situation both in London and at home. Their first trip to a supermarket is priceless. It's one of those movies that stuck with me, and some of the quotes from it still resonate deeply after all these years. Are these, would these be spoilers to do the quotes?
Maybe, yeah. Maybe just go to the question.
Yeah. Don't pay attention to Rotten Tomatoes synopsis. It is slightly wrong. Anyway, after saying all that, my question is this. He hides the news about martial law in Poland from them. I can't imagine this happening today with the ubiquity of cell phones and smartphones. Can you think of any other favourite films that are of a place and time now, not just because of the historical events they are part of, but because of today's technology? P.S. Oh, Lordy, I just reread this and it makes no sense. Now remember, if David reads this, it should be in the voice of Chris Webb. But if Marek reads it, it should be as a man with defrosting peas in his mouth. Well, this is what Chris Webb sounds like today. Best app! Thank you, Uncle Ezra. You know, cell phones have killed the thriller so a bit because they keep having to be set in places with no signal. And that keeps having to be said. And
we talked about this before, There's always a bit where they get their the bit where they someone should do a compilation. I'm sure they've done this already.
Yeah.
Of people's a mashup of people's
no
cell
bars,
no bars, or cell phones running out,
battery,
or reception going.
Yeah, yeah. But
it used to be cutting the telephone line. Used to be the one, didn't it? Before.
Yeah, yeah. That and was now it. You just pick up the receiver and it'd be beep, and that's all you needed. Yeah. That told you everything.
Or just pulling the phone out and the cord coming out and it being a
Yeah. It's or if people don't use their phone when they could, you go, what are you doing, you idiot? Call for help. Don't keep running around this house.
Maybe in the future, when they stop getting that little bit of material that's in all phones, that's really valuable, that they need to make. You know, all phone, they're trying to send your phones back, aren't they?
Yeah.
Because there's a weird sort of bit of some sort of silicon, I don't even know what it's called.
Adamantium.
Yes.
They're trying to make Wolverine.
No, it's not adamantium. It's some sort of chemical, but it makes your phones work. So they realise they're going to run out of it.
Yeah.
And they're trying to send your phones back because that bit of material
is that
really
why?
Value. Yeah.
Okay.
Because there's only one place, like some sort of cave in Africa somewhere, has got it. I mean, I'm just.
You're turning it into a bit of a fairy tale. But...
Yeah. Anyway, so there might not be phones in the future. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Okay.
So people won't have this problem.
Well, hopefully, we'll regress. Forward to that day.
I mean, when the plague comes and the world is... When the apocalypse is here, at least you can think, do you know what? At least if we make a film, we don't have to worry about the old mobile phone dilemma.
You know, it's going to be a disease that kills us all, isn't it?
That could be it now.
There it is. Outbreak.
That's for you, Jane Brown.
It's going to be...
It stopped outside your house.
The siren's coming from inside the house.
I knew.
It's in the kitchen.
I knew I shouldn't have shot that old lady.
It's going to be a disease that does kill us all eventually, isn't it?
Yeah, plague.
It's not going to be something exciting like a tidal wave or a meteor. It's just going to be a horrible disease.
There's no antibiotics if all the rich people have stocked them up.
Well, no, they won't work anymore. That's the thing. All of the food companies have given antibiotic resistance to the bacteria. Thanks, food companies.
I've already peaked anyway, I don't know about you.
Oh yeah, we won't get it, but you know, the next generation is screwed. But we sure did have some lovely pizzas.
Well, I don't think you've answered the question, but on that note...
Yeah, I think we're going to go, aren't we? We'll be back next week.
Enjoy the summer.
Yeah, please do. Why not email us about how much you've enjoyed the summer, or if you've seen a summer film?
We've done this already.
I know, but I'll remind them. DearFilmFandango@gmail.com. Talk to us.
In the meantime,
keep watching the films.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.